Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from makingcomputerdothings.com. Let us begin. Good evening, everyone. My guests tonight are Dennis Walther, aka Bytekeeper.
Hi there.
Marian Deveca, the author of Killerbot.
Hi.
And the new guest, Impi, the author of EveBot, the only Australian bot author we know. And with that, it is customary to begin with the introductions. So, Impi, would you mind saying a few words about yourself and how did you came upon this scene and what made you decide that you will develop brood war bots?
I found out about SSC AIT from the YouTube channel, the promotion video they had on it, and I was hooked. I wanted to learn a programming language. And I thought that this would be the best way to do so, which it is. I guess it's not very practical. It probably can't land me a job, but it's still very fun.
What language did you pick in the end?
Java.
Huh.
I picked Java because C++ had a UAB or UAAB, and it was all set up, and I wanted to learn from there. Didn't want anything set up for me. I wanted to start from scratch. This is the best way to start, in my opinion.
So you didn't have any serious programming background before?
No. I was brand new.
Oh, I think that's the first thing I encountered something like that. Can I ask what's your background otherwise?
I'll say that again, sorry?
So can I ask, what do you do then, if you're not a developer or something related?
I've just finished school when I was pretty much just bored. It was towards the end of 2016, and I was having a gap year, just figuring out what I should do.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, with the introduction out of the way, let's talk about our first topic, which is stuff on Bazel, since Bytekeeper is here and he's the owner and maintainer of Bazel. I noticed that you had some interesting statistics. Do you want to talk about those?
Yeah, a few days ago I thought about how can you... I mean, a huge problem for me is which games are interesting, and it's hard to see with the amount of games that are played on Bazel. So I thought, what would I want to know? I would want to know things like how many units, how many nukes were thrown in the game. And so I decided to change the tournament manager code to actually... in addition to the normal stuff, also paste out the events, such as unit discover, and you all know them, so that Bazel can actually capture them and store them, and I can do them queries on them. So one thing you saw is the global stats page with all the units. That's the first thing. I'm not sure it's completely correct, but I'm 80% sure.
40,000 Zerglings have died since Bazel is started collecting the data.
Yes, and that's only one day.
Wow. Every day, 40,000 Zerglings die. Only you.
Yeah, you should stop building them.
Stop making 4 pool bots. Save the environment. Thank you.
And the poor Zerglings.
And another interesting statistic is there seem to be a Protoss hegemony on Bazel. I mean, Protoss win rates are quite higher than the other races. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But it's also... You can see in all tournaments that are not SSCIT or Bazel-based, Protoss are pretty much on top.
Why do you think that is? And that's a question for everyone.
So in my opinion, it's because the Protoss race has some units which are for artificial intelligence quite well suited, like Dragoons. And most of the top bots have really great control of Dragoons with their hit and run micro, so very good spreading in large dragon formations. And we know that for human this is almost impossible to do in this way, and dragon is a core unit in both matchups versus Zerg and versus Terran. And I as a Zerg bot developer, I had a tremendous problems dealing with this Dragon Micro, and it still have not resolved it properly.
What are the plans or what steps did you take to defeat the Great Dragon Ball?
So I, at this moment, I use a lot of static defense to set up my economy, and then I try to overrun the bot when I have around 50 drones with mass hydralisks. But this does not always work. I think the best choice would be to implement some very good Zergling micro that would also be with surrounds. But this is kind of hard to do. I don't know of many bots that do this well. Maybe Cherry Pie does this or TSCMU, but from the current Zerg bots, this kind of level of Zergling control is not yet out there.
I'm struggling with the same problem. I mean, I'm investigating it. One of the greatest challenges is that not even simple pathfinding, it's a group pathfinding. The Zerglings have to be aware of the other Zerglings' positions for the most part. And that's maybe an order of magnitude more difficult problem than just finding a path for one unit. You might have to keep in mind temporal constraints as well. So not just moving in space, but in time, the units as well. Not time traveling, but just knowing in which frame which unit occupies which place. Or maybe I'm overthinking this.
Yes, exactly. I think the pathfinding and group interaction, especially with melee units, is very interesting. Because with range units, you can always at least shoot. But if your melee units are somewhat stupidly blocked, then they are basically not fighting at all. And you may, it could mean a lot of difference if you have a good setup with your melee units.
I think it's also very difficult to get surrounds against the good bots because of the disclosure of the target information of units. You know if an enemy circling is that does want to attack you, so you can predict things, and it's. I think it should be removed, the target at least.
Yeah, you can work with that information, which Zergling wants to attack which unit, and obviously a human player only have guesses in that regard.
Yeah, well, I remember when I started back then in 1987 or 8, I also played Protoss because I found it simpler, and I still think it's simpler than the other races because you have Zealots and Goons, and it's enough for a huge part of the game.
Yes, I also used to play Protoss quite a lot, and I played a little bit of Zerg too, and I could not play Terran at all because both Zerg and Terran have a much higher APM constraints than Protoss. I used to be around 150 APM player, and it was kind of good enough for the Protoss if I was not playing some kind of very high level Terran who dropped me at three places at the same time, and I could not deal with that. But you can just learn to macro with your low APM and build 10 gateways and build Zealots and Dragons. These units are pretty durable, so you don't have to basically have super perfect micro. Just the unit positioning is very important with Protoss, but that's important for all races.
Yeah, that's a key point, I think. Zealot and Dragoon basically stays relevant the whole game. There are very few other units that can be used effectively throughout the whole game.
Yeah, and from time to time you have to hit T for Psionic Storm and maybe learn some Reaver Micro, and if the game goes farther on, then you will do some status field or build carriers, and carriers are actually pretty easy to micro for humans.
Carriers are OP.
Yes.
What race Evebot plays and why that race? Can you talk about that a little, Imbi?
Well, Evebot is not my first bot. I made a very basic bot earlier on. It was a Zerg bot, and that didn't go very well. The idea is I wanted Evebot to be a marine hell, pretty much. This yolds and yolds of marines just hitting you in raves, and you just get overwhelmed. And I got distracted trying to defend myself. In the early game, I thought maybe I could just go mech. And I did for a while. And a bit of technical issues and issues with my coding. And I just went, oh, I just go full bio. Because why not? For the memes.
How much Firebats do you use? This is a very important question.
So there's three minimum. And it's increases depending on how many enemy units there are. Mostly it spills marines. I think the latest updates, I did disable Firebats against Terran and Protoss. The only Zerg only thing now.
Memes aside, Dan actually said that he should use more Firebats in some edge cases. So maybe that unit has some uses after all. I mean, if Dangan says it, then it must be truth.
Certainly.
There is a few cases to use Firebats, and usually it's only versus Zerg, versus Zerglings, and later on in the game when the Zerg has Dark Swarm. That's basically the only unit that can damage stuff under Swarm, except for apart from splash damage. But if you want to be do some nice styling attacks, you can do Firebat drops to kill workers, and that can be done also versus Protoss.
Well, you can pretty much do that versus everyone, but maybe Marine drops just better in that case. We need testing.
They aren't that bad if you want to hold a ramp or something. They could shoot down and hit multiple units. I guess they are quite defensive. Against Protoss, and those Zealots clump up in the choke point or something, they could do a bit of damage.
I wonder how effective they would be in a bunker versus Zealots, but it's so hard to be there at the right time versus Zealots.
So if I was a Zealot and there were Firebats in the bunker, I would just skip the bunker and go past it.
That is the
cheat talk.
Sorry, what was that?
I just said cheater. I think it's mandatory to attack the front bunker. Iron started cheating, but it has...
Yeah, you're right. That's just only fair. Also, speaking of Bazel, I saw that Bazel already supports BW API 4.4, and that's a great thing. And with that, I'd like to talk about BW API new release a little bit. I mean, it's not a major release, if I saw that correctly, but still, it's improvement and bug fixes. Do we know anything in detail about that?
I think the main pain point of 4.2 was the LATCOM implementation, which Hannes fixed in 4.3. There were some issues with 4.3, so it's no longer supported, but the fixes are still in 4.4, so it's still relevant for those who use LATCOM.
It's common wisdom that eventually you need to keep that in mind. I don't know. I haven't reached that point yet.
Oh, I think you will reach that point very soon. But it depends on this, on how you did your code. I mean, having LATCOM is fine, I think, but it could also promise things that are not really going to happen. I think, at least.
Yeah, I had some serious issues with LATCOM in the past, so at some point I disabled it completely and handled the inconsistencies myself, but it's now very predictable and it kind of always works for me.
That's actually great. All right, and a great thanks to Hannes for that. I mentioned before that libraries and APIs and that kind of stuff is one of the more important backbones of this whole scene, and they don't get enough praise for that. So thanks again.
Yeah, thanks for keeping it up.
Yeah, thanks.
Library development is not as sexy as bot development. That's just the fact of life.
Are you sure? I mean, is there any bot that is named FAP or ASS?
That's a good point. Alright, another great topic I'd like to discuss in detail is terrain analysis and map and terrain analysis and the libraries that are available to do that. I think everyone is aware of BWEM, BWEB and BWTA. I'm sure everyone knows what those are, but let's talk about those and the difficulties of that. First of all, what kind of encounters experiences do you have with map analyzing libraries?
Well, at the beginning I used BWTA and I wasn't very satisfied. The errors were sometimes, I thought it were sometimes a bit off, and the mineral assignment to the bases was a bit strange. BWEM is a lot better, but there are some maps where you get also crazy bases where it tries to set up a base behind minerals and stuff. I don't know if it's fixed in the community edition. Maybe it is. But we also got a new one, I think, from Jay. He didn't name it yet, and I don't know if he will publish it as a separate library. Also, it would be interesting to see where this is going.
Yeah, I'm eagerly awaiting that as well.
So back then, when I started developing my bot in 2012, there was only BWTA, and I kind of experimented with it, but I didn't like it mostly because it was very slow before the maps got cached, and also sometimes inaccurate. So I decided for my purpose to implement something on my own, but it's very simple. It just detects expansions, can say whether it's a natural or an island, and pre-computes distances between expansions, something like that. So I don't have any choke or breach detection, nothing like that, but I would like to add something like this, whether it's by including BWEM or or some other way.
Very interesting. How do you do your Muta micro then?
That's a separate thing. It's basically computes army power for each build tile, and then well, I could go into detail how that works. It's basically a thread grid of some sort, and it's on each frame it is like radiating, how would I say? So I don't get I don't compute the whole picture at each frame, but each frame just updates one square farther and farther. So for example, if I don't know, a Goliath has 8 tile range, then this information is radiated within 8 frames, and so I know that there is this Goliath 8 frames away, but then I have a set of all of the units that have a reach on that build tile, and basically I use this information as a thread grid to assess how strong everything is and if I can attack or should I withdraw. But I also do some if then else stuff, because if there is a turret, is not maybe so strong, but SCVs can repair it, so I have to compensate for things like repairs and medic healing. Yeah.
So basically, you are not using Terran information at all for Muta Micro. That is it's interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Well, Mutalisk are air units, so I could use some information about cliffs that would be useful. But kind of when I tested versus Saida always has floating buildings. I think Crasio has that too, and so I kind of didn't find use for it.
Yeah, it might be worth it to approach from an angle that is harder for ground units to reach, but it's a very marginal advantage. Still, this kind of thing is all about marginal advantages all the time, so who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of your Muta Micro, I noticed I haven't watched many games of your bot, just mostly the ones that Nepeta cast, and you seem to use just one large blob of Mutas. Is that how it is, or just in the matches I saw? I mean, using 50 Mutas and not two groups of 25 seems overkill to me.
I think we already had this question, but I can answer again. I have support for multiple groups. It's just a setting in my code that I can set the maximum amount in one group, and through testing I found that one big group is better in most cases, especially when I'm fighting things like Goliaths or Dragoons, because my Mutas are less indecisive once I reach number like 20. And then my Mutas just go on a rampage and kill everything. While if I had, for example, two groups with 10 Mutalisks, then maybe the Mutalisk will be more hesitant to attack. It would be better versus like things like SCVs or Marines, but not versus everything else. So I find the decisiveness factor, and that is most important here throughout testing.
Back to the Terran analyzer libraries. I too found that BWTA is kind of slow and doesn't have a lot of functionalities I would require. And to the best of my knowledge, it's no longer maintained or actively worked upon either. So I switched to BWEB, which is so far so good. Although I'm kind of struggled with it, and I documented my journey with it, because it doesn't assign region values to, well, most of the map. So there are quite some improvement points in that.
Yeah, it's... Well, but it does assign areas to every walkable field, I think. If you remember correct, you found some where it didn't assign areas to walkable tiles?
Yes, exactly. And quite a lot of walkable tiles, in fact. Maybe the part of the problem is that it uses a larger resolution than I have. I work with walk position objects, and I think BWEM uses tile, built tile level resolution, but I'm not sure about that. And there is the get nearest area method, which is very slow because it uses breadth first search. It assigns the nearest area's area code, but it actually doesn't work for most of the time. So I had to patch those functionalities out.
Yeah, that's also a small problem. You're using the Java port, so I think you're missing out on the improvements of the community edition, because Edekai ported it before the community edition was done, and I helped him a bit fixing up. And he wanted to do a new version, actually using the community edition and just making Java wrappers for it. I don't know the state of it, but I think it's interesting if it's actually, if someone is still fixing or looking after it.
Yeah, I've been contemplating switching to the community version, and I basically just ported the BWEM myself, because it's for the most part it's not hard to do. But since I'm considering switching from BWAPI4J to GBWAPI, got these names, yes, so one Java library to another, I might just skip that step altogether.
Why?
GBWAPI has a BWEM version.
It's the same version as the BWAPI for J has. Jaeger just copied it over.
Oh, I was not aware of this. So yeah, Terran analyzing, it is serious business. And one thing this always comes up is just the speed of some pathfindings and other terrain-based methods. And I know it's a hard problem. Did you encounter things like that when you had to roll your own method instead of the Terran libraries?
So you mean me, right?
Well, question is for everyone, but yeah.
Yeah, so I have some ideas how I would implement, for example, detection of chokes or bridges or things like that. But there is more to it. For example, when you would like to do also wall-ins or sim cities, things like that, even more complex. But as for me as a Zerg, I can also work with not so perfect walls, but if a Protoss plays versus Zerg, those walls had to be very Zergling proof. Otherwise, you could just run by a lot of Zerglings early on and kill the fast expansion of Protoss.
Zergling proofing was is not an easy feat, but it is something that a library might do better. Because I even in pro games, I saw people just fucking it up and getting overrun, but by one Zergling white column. It is hilarious.
It's really frustrating too, because when I was playing Protoss, I had to learn all the wallings by heart. So basically, you spend a lot of time studying those walls, and then you play a single player and just train those walls on each of the maps and each of the positions. So there is, if there is like 10 maps and each map is four player, then you have 40 positions to remember where you put your forge and where you put your gateway, and also where you put your first pylon, because you can screw it also by wrongly putting the first pylon, and then you cannot put the gateway where it should be. And yeah, this is really, really frustrating. Also, on some maps you cannot do it 100% correctly, so, or 100% easily, I would say. Then you had to also block by some probes or be ready to pull probes. So it's really hard for humans. So I think bots have this much easier.
And also Zerglings tend to come very early, so you can't just build another gateway. You might not have the money and the time to build it.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, Cybernetics Core is one of the better buildings to put as a wall, because it's more it's larger than gateway or forge, so it can in some situation block in a better way, but it's oftentimes too late before the Zerglings comes.
And I might be wrong about this, but I recall that some terrain features are not blocking the Zerglings path as they should, so you even have to be aware of that.
Exactly. There's a very good point. Some walls and some doodads have also different sizes. So sometimes when you put, for example, a forge next to a wall, a Zergling can pass. And sometimes when you put a forge next to a different wall or doodad, then a Zergling cannot pass. It's so hilarious.
What you see is not what you get.
Exactly.
And one thing I haven't seen or not aware of is an offline map analyzer. I mean, maps are static things, and you can pre-compute the data about them. I guess you should be aware of the specific map format and extract the data directly from that. And that might be more of a technical challenge. I have zero idea about that, but you can easily just do that full independently of your actual game. So if anyone wants to do that, please just note that it was my idea. I'm the one to thank for it.
But it also has some disadvantages. You can see something like that in the old bots. The reason we're still using maps, the same maps as 10 years ago, is the old bots can't cope with new maps. And pre-computing is something that would make it even worse, I think, if you did a pre-computing library.
Also, I guess there are some destructible map elements in some of the maps, so that might screw it up.
Yeah, destructible elements, minerals that you have to mine out, or things like that are pretty common in nowadays maps. So, yeah, I think we should have the computing power to do it inside of the game if we use the right algorithms for.
Are you advocating using coding and algorithms?
Yeah,
common feature, for example, is stacked neutral buildings, which is kind of a hack in itself, so we have to analyze kind of hack together maps, but dealing with hack together things is basically what we do. Alright, next topic to discuss is a dear topic of mine, which is getting new players to this scene. We have touched this topic time and again, and we will in the future. And the thing I want to talk about is the SSEI tournament stream viewership seems to have dropped in the recent past, and viewers are almost always were in the double digits. Now it's more like single digits. And why do you think that is? We are no longer cool?
Ooh, that's a hard one.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think it has something to do with the StarCraft II being more popular in more advertised, I would say, in to people. So people maybe are more interested in StarCraft II. But I remember years, basically the year that I won SSEIT, I think it was 2015, where in the finals my bot was fighting Tomáš Vajda, the carrier bot, and I think that video on YouTube had 20,000 viewers.
So maybe it's just the live stream thing that people don't watch as much anymore.
No, in general, the numbers went down since then. I don't think we had more than a few thousand views since that year. So I don't know, maybe we are not marketing enough, or how should I say it, promoting enough, or something like that. But yeah, we are basically developers, not marketers. So yeah,
I guess part of the reason is also the remastered version. Everyone is just expecting to see the remastered and not the old one. So I think it would really help if the BW API would work for remastered. It's on their list, we know it. It's at the very bottom every time, but at least they don't forget it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. This would definitely give a huge boost, I think, to everything, and especially if it would be very easy to set up our bots in the remastered. I would think something like you hit one button where you have a browse, and then you will just double click on the bot, and you would just play it, so you don't have to set up complicated software and configure everything by hand.
Actually, that is a plan of mine. You hit the nail in the head, because I wanted to talk about my grand plan, which is to have exactly this, some kind of client when you can just log in, pick a bot and play against it. I think that would do great things for the popularity of Brood War bots. And yes, remastered support is very key to this. I mean, we can do it without it, and we should do it without it. But yeah, remastered.
Yeah, if it would be possible that we would also integrate for now into that software, so it will somehow downgrade the remastered version to 1.16, so that they can play seamlessly. Would that be possible? I don't know.
I think that 1.16 is like a very small thing. It's like 100 megabytes. You can have it aside remastered. What would be great is just an installer. You press next finish, and then you can play. It doesn't matter. You don't have to modify the remastered client for that. But I don't know.
I think something that would even be more, even better would be, I think it would be really cool to have bots in Battle.net actually. So you just go log into Battle.net and choose a bot to play against. That would be very cool.
Yes, that would be cool too, but that would also mean that we will have to have some processing power bot somewhere, either on use our own computers or some virtual machines in the cloud that would run 24/7, or and that would cost some additional money. Whereas the solution for a client is basically for free.
Yeah, I was thinking about an online ladder. So, but for Battle.net integration, I don't know if that's possible for a third party. I think we would need official support for that.
True, but we already need official support for the remastered BW API. So maybe we could just wriggle our way in there.
Yeah, anyone knows how can we poke Blizzard with a stick to help us?
I don't know, maybe if there was some offline event, maybe we could ask them face-to-face, maybe that would help, I don't know.
So actually, because I went down to PAX Australia last year, Blizzard had their Diablo booth there, and I was going to ask them, but I completely forgot about it. I was going to ask them, how's BW API going along?
So it's your fault then?
Yeah, pretty much.
Walk of shame.
Yeah, I thought, you know, since they're Diablo, they may not know. But, yeah, it's all my fault. Sorry, guys.
You're lucky you're so far away.
So that's the reason you're trying to sabotage SSCIT as well?
For science.
Yeah, you're the only other person I know who managed to crash the SSCIT server when uploading his bot.
That's an achievement.
Yeah, it should be.
We're special.
Welcome to the club.
Get our own portrait on the server.
Mm-hmm. So back to the popularity topic. I think there are two distinct groups that should be reached. And those are gamers and coders. And these groups overlap surprisingly little. And obviously where we are concerned. You might remember that I did a cast with Fear Dragon, who is a gamer and a coder. And I got very little feedback on that. And I expected it to be more popular. And I'm not saying that because I'm very sad and crying in the corner, but it seems that for the average gamer, it is not that interesting to develop a bot or even care about it. But do you have any experiences in this matter?
Well, if you look at how it's done in Brute War, BW API, it's not very easy to start. There are tutorials, but they're really old school tutorials, just for Java, nothing for C++, and it's different in other programming games. I don't know if you know any other games, but there are things like Robo something where you program tanks, and it's very easy to start out with pre-built examples, and you can challenge different bots with different skill sets, so you can advance yourself. It's something that might help beginners.
Yeah, I think we are more on the coder side than the gamer one. On that, so it would be great to have some insights in that matter. And for coders, my opinion is that the average coder or developer has very little time for side projects. So it must be either interesting or a well-paying stuff. And since the budget of us is basically two pretzels, I think it should be interesting and easy enough and convenient enough for a developer to get interested in this. And yes, we still don't have a proper tutorial.
I think it would already help if you had a real, real fast big start. You just download example bot. I don't mean Alberta bot, it's not really an easy example. Just something that does basic stuff. You can change a few things and you can see progress immediately. So maybe you can hook people faster that way.
Yeah, it seems like the barrier of entry is pretty high. You have to work for weeks on your bot, just combating BW API's stupidity.
Yeah, it was rough for me. I think on the topic, it's also the game called Scripts. It uses JavaScript, and you can control your minions for whatever you want. It's like a sandbox game. And I was playing that for a bit. Also, on the popularity subject, SSC AIT was mentioned on the DeepMind stream, just briefly. And I did notice after that the stream did have a bit more viewers. Had about 50 viewers, something along the lines of that. I always wanted to do a framework, pretty much, is what Lightkeeper explained, like a very basic, like a bot that gathers worker management, building orders, and whatnot. I mean, they can't just download, stick their name on it, and give it a build.
There was a Java bot. I don't know if you or Shanko, if you know it. It's Atlantis. I actually started out with it 2 years ago. It's meant as a framework for Java bots. It's no longer maintained and horribly slow, but it was a good start.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I wanted to start from scratch. So I wanted to learn.
The problem is there are so many ways to do certain things. So maybe if you, for example, implement a build order system, someone will come up with a better one or the one he prefers more. I think the point where you should just begin coding and don't have to muck around with settings and libraries and obscure versions, that would be a great starting point. Because when I started, I remember just not getting BW API to work for a day.
Yeah, also you have to set up either virtual machines or the SC Docker is now available, so that you can actually test your bot versus other bots. But maybe for a beginner, you start testing your bot just versus the built-in AI and go from there.
Yeah, and SC Docker is great, but that information is not that readily available as well. So yeah, that should be part of this tutorial that may never come.
Yeah, but SC Docker is also not something you can make very easy. Docker is per se for developers or operations people, so it's pretty likely most developers will never saw Docker and are not really interested, and then you have this complicated setup. It's I don't know.
Yes, Sonko, we need your help. We need your software.
Yep. If only I had infinite time to do that.
I also think something that will help beginners, or even not even only beginners, also advanced bot authors, is doing more library stuff or helping each other out with the same libraries. That's one of the reasons I started ASS. Yeah, the name is not very good, I think, but I was trying to get things inside there which not everybody has to use, but could use, like a part of FAP with a twist, or pathfinding and such things. BWEM is another example. We should focus a lot more on those things too, and not have everyone do his own thing.
Yeah, but you can't force people to work on that unless you pay them. So that is the big, great divide. I mean,
I didn't mean to force anyone. No. I just mean make them more aware that there are projects and that they can actually participate in them. I know it's a hobby for everyone. It's clearly a hobby for me. So I wouldn't want to force anybody doing anything.
Okay, forcing was not a good phrase, but yeah, basically you're right.
Yes, sorry. So basically the C++ authors have option to not start from scratch, but they usually pick either you, Alberta Bot, or maybe more recently Steamhammer, and can start from there.
Or Locutus.
Yeah.
And I think what should be beneficial is advertising this as a way to begin coding. I know multiple people who begin serious coding with SSCIT. I mean, it's called Student StarCraft AI Tournament and it's done by chance. Actually, the barrier of entry in the respect of coding knowledge, it's not that high. You don't have to be a master coder to start developing bots, but you can learn a lot.
Yeah, it is very difficult, but it is also visual. And I think people who would like to learn how to code or basically are interested in games, this is a very good thing for them, because they can see their fruits of their work very quickly.
Impi, you're actually a good example for this.
I am. It's very rewarding seeing your bot work. And
you mentioned that you gained coding knowledge from it.
Yeah. If you review older versions of my bot, you can see that I start to utilize array lists. I use a lot of them. And for a period of time, my bot was no null checking for my bot. So it just crashed randomly. And then the latest version had classes in it, two classes, and I was starting to touch on that.
Or maybe we could just ride the hype wave and provide the JavaScript framework for it. I mean, every 2 weeks a new JavaScript frameworks get released anyway.
Oh, well, with BW, that's called, it could be possible to maybe even write some form of JavaScript bot that is connected to OpenBW.
Why stop there? We can have a Fortran port for it. But speaking of OpenBW, it is a great project, but it seems kind of abandoned to me. Do you know anything about the state of that? I know, for example, TSCMU worked on it, and we have TSCMU to thank for the reply viewer so it was a great service to the community. But the last update is somewhere around 2017.
Yeah, I have no information about the state of that. It is, however, open sourced, so I think anyone can do something from it, like, for example, the visualizer that Dan posted recently, that I think is based from OpenBW, looks to be a very cool app.
I'm not aware of that. Can you elaborate a little?
So it's basically like a replay viewer, but you have also some additional information displayed, like heat maps or some data organized in either trees or just statistics tables. You can use it basically to visualize any log information or output from neural networks, things like that.
Wow, sounds really helpful and advanced.
By the way, I believe TSMU is still fixing things in OpenBW. It's not very regularly, but there are also very few complaints.
And it begs the question that if we have StarCraft Remastered support, will that invalidate OpenBW? I mean, I imagine if the time comes, the support will be extensive.
Yeah, it's possible, but who knows when that time comes. And I'm actually very happy that TSMU implemented this OpenBW. It was actually also a huge boost for SSCIT, because when Nepeta casts, he uses this OpenBW replay viewer, and we know that the resolution for the replays is much higher than the original StarCraft, which is only 640 pixels. Per 480.
Yeah.
I don't think that OpenBW will be updated if we have remastered. There's a huge difference. I mean, it's not huge for us to see, but I think there are very, very, very minute details. If you take a look at the OpenBW code, you'll see there's so much hackery going on, and even changing small things will make everything else break. So I don't think that it will be updated.
Hackery is that a surprise at this point?
The code is actually good. I think it's more, the hackery is more in the how do I make it compatible to the real brute war.
Alright, next topic, which has been mentioned in previous casts also, pro games, pro leagues, do you watch them and do you learn from them actively? Do you have anything implemented that you saw in pro players games? How much does it affect your bot?
Yeah, so for me, I'm a huge fan of pro league. I've been watching pro league and all these Star Leagues for quite some time, maybe since 2005, on and off, of course. Right now I'm kind of lagging behind, so I have not watched too many from this year. I still have some things I want to watch from the last year. So yeah, I have to catch up. It's always a great source of inspiration. Even after 20 years, the players still find new crazy ways how to win, and also the map makers make really great effort to help create some new crazy maps like Sparkle or Third World. Third World was really, really great map, which manifested in so many diverse games and strategies we never seen before.
And I must admit, I just watch a few, and my bot is not at a state when it matters. And also, I just tend to focus on interesting problems, which has nothing to do with win rates. But I think it has an effect on bot meta.
Yeah, at our level, we many times struggle with things that make our bot do stupid things instead of follow what we would want it to do. So fixing bugs is usually the correct way to increase your win rate. Usually when you add something new to your bot, you some new parts break, so you always have to cycle through adding new stuff and go back, fix some other stuff, and then add new stuff on top of that, and then again fix.
Not unlike a house of cards.
It's a very difficult thing. Even small changes have an effect that if you read Chase Block, you can see it. It's every change in one at one point changes, might change the whole situation in another scenario. So it's pretty hard. And without unit testing, it's something you mentioned also. Without unit testing, it's or the ability to do something like it, it's really getting hard. It's even harder.
Yeah, it's very hard, even the unit tests, because of the randomness in StarCraft. You run one scenario where it's just, for example, Lynx versus Zealots, and you run it 10 times, and it always ends up somewhat differently. One time you win, one time one Zergling is left, one other time you win decisively when half of your army is there. So there is a lot of randomness, and sometimes it is also difficult to, without watching the match by yourself, to construct conditions which would mean that your bot is actually doing the right thing, because you can fail in some manner that you would not expect. And yeah, I to read J. Scott's blog, it's he's really put a lot of effort in it, and it's a really great read. And we see this all the time. When you add something new, then other things breaks. I have also experience in this field, and for example, I remember adding threat sense to remote hatcheries so that they would not morph drones or other things when there are, for example, vultures attacking the unprotected expansion. But this also backfired to me when you are defending situations like bunker rushes or early rushes, and basically my expansion stopped producing units altogether because they were afraid to losing them. So it's really difficult to set up the correct balance between when to do it and when to not do it. And this applies to a whole range of issues in StarCraft.
Yeah, and that was technically not a bug. I mean, everything worked as it intended.
Yeah, exactly. You basically design something and you think, yeah, this is great. And then a situation comes and you see, oh, this is not so great.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
It is. All right, with that, I think I'd like to conclude the cast now. All right, thank you very much for being here and hopefully see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for hearing me ramble on. Can I have my family back?
Maybe.